This episode of Talk of the Devils is sponsored once more by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit 1 million orders phase. Yep, Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling ETH style turtleneck sweaters or blueprints for brand new stadiums, Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to Talk of the Devils, you can sign up for our $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/reddevils, all in lowercase without any spaces. So go to shopify.com/reddevils to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/reddevils.
The Athletic.
Yes, I feel betrayed, and I felt that some people that don't want me here, not only this year, but last year too.
This is Talk of the Devils, the Athletic's podcast dedicated to Manchester United. And well, it's been just another quiet, uneventful weekend for United, hasn't it? My goodness, there is quite simply never a dull moment, is there? Of course, on the pod today, we will be reacting to that bombshell interview from Cristiano Ronaldo, what he said, how it's been received, and what's still to come as well. We'll also react to that dramatic finish at Fulham and the young lad that delivered it for United as well. There's certainly a lot to get through, you can say that again. And we thought we'd assemble the full squad to do it. We've actually got the lads in three different countries today as well. Andy Mitten is in Norway, Karl Anka is in London, and Laurie Whitwell is in Serbia as he continues his journey to the World Cup. Good morning, all.
Hiya.
Morning.
Morning.
Yeah, good morning. I think you guys are probably just about the most perfect advert that wherever you're waking up in the world today, you're talking about Cristiano Ronaldo, aren't you, Andy?
Yeah, I put my phone on and just, oh, jeez, it's absolutely mad. But Manchester United has his ability to throw these stories up two or three times a year. And I like it. I like the buzz that goes with it. As a wise old journalist said to me many years ago, it's better to be in the car wash when it's fully on than when it's switched off. I think we're all going to have a day today where we're going to ask to comment about Ronaldo. But the first bit of comment I'm doing is for this podcast. And it's a shame in some ways that it's going to overshadow Garnacho's late goal at Fulham and a really important win for Manchester United, but it will do because Ronaldo is such huge news and there's so many different facets to pick apart, and I'm sure we're going to discuss them.
Carl, you were at Fulham yesterday. We're going to talk about that match later on in the podcast, but I'm guessing you've not written much about that match.
I pretty much finished my piece. So, you know, went to Craven Cottage, wrote up the first draft, got on the train, went back to the Athletic mothership back in central London. Finished the piece, all good, fact checked, got all the touch maps in, like, great, amazing, gonna pour myself a nice glass of water, check Twitter, oh my God, Ronaldo's done what? It's the business. It is the business. I am a little bit annoyed at the timing last night because, as Andy says, it did overshadow Garnacho's goal and what should have been a really nice way to cap off this first half of the Premier League season. He's, you know, an academy graduate scoring a last-minute winner, proper Man United. And now we have to talk about this,
yeah,
don't we?
Yeah, we do.
They're trying to force you out.
Yes, not only the coach, but the other two or three guys there around the club.
At the senior executive level?
Yes, that I felt betrayed.
And you think they're trying to get rid of you?
Honestly, I shouldn't say that, I don't know. But listen, I don't care. I'm always, people should listen to the truth. Yes, I feel betrayed, and I felt that some people that don't want me here, not only this year, but last year too.
Right, Laurie, you were pulling your suitcase up a cobbled street as the news was coming in last night to check into your hotel because you're on your magical mystery tour to the World Cup. I'll give you the first word on this. What do you think of it?
I think it was coming, wasn't it, I suppose? We kept asking, didn't we, when is he going to do this interview that he's promised? It was sort of 2 weeks before the transfer window was closing when he first posted on Instagram, didn't he, that he was going to set the record straight. I think we could all sense that Piers Morgan might be the vehicle for that, given how strong Piers Morgan has been on social media about Ronaldo, and also the fact they've done an interview before, haven't they? And he's got a massive platform, millions of Twitter followers. So I guess Ronaldo's thinking, this is my way to project it the furthest in one fell swoop. We'd just come through, we're on a bus 6 hours from Zagreb to Belgrade, and we'd just come through passport control. You have to sort of stop and get off at both borders, so the Croatian side and then the Serbian side. You get out the bus, you're in the cold, kind of waiting for everybody else on the bus to get their passports checked. And I was frantically trying to, because obviously Piers Morgan had trailed it, hadn't he? I was frantically trying to get the old data roaming going, because once you get into Serbia, it's no longer an EU zone where you can hop on freely. So I had to buy the old bundle, and I'm on the bus just trying to keep updated. And it's I was trying to figure out how it was coming out. So obviously the actual interview hasn't been shown yet, has it? It's kind of two clips.
No, not yet.
And then, but the rest of it's in the Sun newspaper. So it seems a bit of an odd way to kind of launch it all. And you're kind of trying to find out which are the real quotes and which are the quotes that somebody just made up, because it's actually, you know, quite explosive with some of the stuff that is real. So you kind
and
of,
then you find out that the real quotes are more weird and wonderful than the actual made up quotes could possibly be, including commenting on Wayne Rooney's appearance, which was probably the bizarrest bit, I think.
He's laid siege to everybody, hasn't he, that's ever sort of criticised him in the past sort of few weeks. I think the most prominent, the most kind of relevant stuff is about Ten Hag, really, because and the club in a wider sense, I suppose, but Ten Hag specifically, because it feels to me that the motivation for Ronaldo doing this interview is because he wants out in January, you know, really. Why else would you do a big interview just before you go to the World Cup, where you've got a break and now, you know, you can reset, I suppose, for the transfer window to come. Clearly, he had all summer to, you know, try and get a new club in the Champions League, and that wasn't possible, you know, for money reasons, as we've discussed before, or just for the way that he might fit into the team. They couldn't find a solution. So it is kind of ironic, I feel like, for him to say they want to force me out. He might now be able to argue that because he's been dropped from the Chelsea squad. Ten Hag is obviously picking other players and he wants a new striker. So he might say, well, you are forcing me out because I'm not being played. Ten Hag will say that actually it's because you tried to push for a move, you've been resistant to my drills that I put on in training, and you've obviously walked off before the matches have been finished. So, you know, I'm not going to accommodate you any longer. But I feel like that's the kind of relevant point where he's saying, Ten Hag doesn't respect me, so I'm not going to respect Ten Hag. I mean, it feels very unnecessary, that kind of level of talk, particularly when you've also had a go at the previous manager, Ralf Rangnick, which we've already discussed. We've written articles about the issues there. But that's two managers in a row where you're saying they're not good enough to manage you. It does kind of sort of suggest, well, are you not a bit of the problem there then? And then I also just think the wider issues that we've touched on before, in terms of the improvements to Carrington, Old Trafford, he talks about how it basically hadn't changed since he'd been away, which I do think they're, you know, relevant points. I think they should be listened to.
I mean, I think you're right, Laurie, in the two sort of most eye-catching comments that we've seen so far, and I say so far because there could be more yet, I suppose, if we're going to see the full interview later on in the week. But Andy's saying that he feels betrayed by the club, and also that he has no respect for Ten Hag. They are the bits, aren't they, really? I mean, just on the betrayed part, it's a bit of a construction, that, isn't it?
I don't know why he feels betrayed by the club. And I think that Ten Hag has actually dealt with him quite well. The whole interview smacks of pride before the fall with Cristiano Ronaldo. He makes some absolutely valid points. He's gone to Piers Morgan, the man who said that the FA Cup was finished because Manchester United pulled out of it in 2000, and he backed up that argument with prominent soap stars of the time.
An elephant never forgets.
Jeez.
It's only 22 years ago.
And he's coming at it from his angle. I read his diaries yesterday, actually. So it's all about him making as big a splash as possible, whether it's with Donald Trump, and he doesn't matter if he upsets those people. And he's got this relationship with Ronaldo, which he described, and I have read the interview in the Sun as improbable, but they become very, very good friends because it serves Cristiano Ronaldo and Piers Morgan well to have that relationship. He's not played well when he's played this year. He's had lots of chances. It's an unedifying final chapter to his time at Manchester United. Actually, it's usually the case with all players. It's just that he's far more high profile. Imagine what it would have been like with George Best in the 70s when he was going AWOL all the time and he was a star player. He's still got a statue of himself outside Old Trafford. I think Ronaldo's points about things like Carrington, as Laurie mentioned, are valid.
Since Sir Alex Ferguson left, I saw no evolution in the club. The progress was zero. Nothing changed. The pool, the jacuzzi, even the gym. I thought I will see different things, different technology, infrastructure. Unfortunately, we see many things that I'm used to see when I was 20, 21, 23. So surprised me a lot.
When he walked away, you could argue that a decline started then, because when he went to Madrid, the money from his transfer fee wasn't spent well. And that set a template for pretty poor recruitment for over a decade from Manchester United. And he left a club who were the world champions. And he came back to a club who were so far from that level. It's not just Carrington, it's Old Trafford as well. I've written about that many times. He could have added to that the youth system, although that's much improved now. But the Glazers let so many things slide. I noticed he didn't go for the Glazers because they pay his wages.
Not mention them.
Well, they pay his wages, don't they? And that would be in breach of contract. So he's timed it well. He knows that he can sail off into the sun, literally. And we might not see him again. However, in August, he thought he was leaving. And he told people in August, I've got one more week here. So that is his version. And he makes some good points and he makes some parts where I think I'm backing Erik ten Hag.
Yeah, Cal, that's the point, really. The interview makes it Ronaldo versus Ten Hag. It makes Manchester United fans make a choice. And for all Ronaldo's popularity, the feeling that Ten Hag's doing a good job and beginning to make the improvements that we all want to see with United, it's not going to be a very easy choice for people to back Ronaldo, is it?
I don't think so. From the quotes I've seen, Ronaldo says he's done this interview for the fans and he believes it's the right time, which doesn't ring true.
For who?
Yeah. I don't think it's the right time for Manchester United fans. I think quite a few United fans want to celebrate Garnacho getting a last-minute winner, are pretty keen on Ten Hag, and understand that even though Ronaldo is correct about quite a few things, Ten Hag is probably the person to go about fixing them. Ronaldo is saying a lot of things that are correct and are things we have mentioned on this podcast numerous times. And he's talked about the investment in the youth and the academy. That's been corrected. We've been on this podcast before talking about the issues with the swimming pool and how England players at Man United had to go to St. George's to rehab using the swimming pool and the jacuzzi because the one at United was broken for a part. These are all things that Ronaldo said that are correct. But going after Ten Hag in the way he does, constantly talking about this concept of respect and betrayal, which I can only really, you know, if Ronaldo views it that way, then Ronaldo views it that way. But why he views it that way is, I can't understand it because I'm not Cristiano Ronaldo.
Do you know what though, Carl? It'd be quite easy for a Manchester United fan to stand there and say that they feel betrayed by Ronaldo, considering he's done this interview at the time that he's done it, the way he's gone after certain people at the club, including Ten Hag, the fact that he's walked out of a stadium before the end of a game. You know, it's that betrayal in a way goes two ways, doesn't it?
I think that's a fair comment. If we look at Cristiano Ronaldo couldn't make pre-season because he said there were family issues and the club said, okay, you don't have to come at pre-season. Absolutely fine. It became quite known that he wants to leave. And we knew this and we know various other things about what he did to try and chase suitors. Fine. Okay. You can put that all to one side. But also Ronaldo's behavior since he's come back for this season under Ten Hag has had a litany of things that you could describe as disrespectful. You could describe as, you know, when you look at the history of United and a number of players that have left under a cloud, I think I've spoken before about how, you know, Wayne Rooney's interview, when Rooney in 2010, 2011 told Roy Keane's interview, yeah. Explosive interviews from Manchester United is not new, but they...
Chapter 10, yeah.
But they very, 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 very rarely end well for the player involved, which then begs the question, why on earth is Ronaldo doing this? Or, you know, why is Ronaldo doing this if he wants to stay or be a Manchester United player? The only prism I think you can view this interview is Ronaldo essentially, you know, burning bridges and saying, I'm out.
Is he out, Andy? Do you think he's kicked his last ball for the club?
Probably, but I still wouldn't go against him playing again for United. He's got a contract. In some ways, the situation has not changed since the summer. There's still no definite offer for him. So if he's got offers lined up, and he thought he did have in the summer, but he didn't, then he could move on. Now, the problem is money. It's financial. He earns so much money that any right-thinking suitor is going to go, okay, we can get Ronaldo. He's going to cost us this. Okay, he's going to be second, third most expensive player in the world on his current salary. Is he currently the best, second, third or best player in the world? No, he's not. He's nowhere near that level. And there's a disconnect between the reality and his perception of himself. And he's one of many footballers. I've seen it happen so many times. Players leave and they say, I didn't want to go. I felt I deserved another year. And it takes them 5 to 10 years to get their head around it. And then they sort of come back and go, okay, maybe the manager had a point. The fans that Ronaldo speaks of, they've been pretty supportive towards him. If he never played again, would there be protests? I don't think there would. Certainly not at Old Trafford. But what is the fans? It's this global construct of millions and millions of people.
Very true.
And within that, there's many different demographics. And within that, there are people for whom Ronaldo is bigger than Manchester United, especially younger people. There just is. In the eyes of my 8-year-old daughter, Ronaldo is bigger than Manchester United. I have a very different view to her, but people consume football in very different ways. It's coming towards the end. That's clear to see. If his wages are taken off what United are paying out to players, that would free up money to bring in a striker. And as we've seen, going back to the actual football, Manchester United have only scored 20 goals so far this season. Manchester City have scored 40 goals. United need a central striker. That could have been Ronaldo last year, and was actually, because he scored a lot of goals last season. This season, that hasn't been the case.
I think it's really important to say, Ronaldo said, Manchester United, they haven't really built up infrastructure. They're not, you know, best in class anymore. They don't have the things they used to be. And you want to say, that's why you're there. Like, that is the reason Cristiano Ronaldo is currently a Manchester United player. If Manchester United did have the infrastructure, did have the technical director, did have the manager that Ronaldo wants, all of those people would have taken a look at Cristiano Ronaldo before last summer and gone, no way. He's too expensive and he doesn't fit the system that I'm trying to play football in. And that he cannot realise that is what Andy's talking about. At some point, he has to realize he might be the problem, or he might be contributing to the problem. And I think Adam Crafton tweeted this last night in that basically all the things that have made Ronaldo a fantastic football player and score all those goals, that drive, that determination, that complete refusal
single-mindedness.
That single-mindedness, that refusal to settle for anything other than the best, is also why he's now in this position, because he's refusing to understand that he's no longer the best. It's really quite like classical literature.
It's quite tragic, actually, in some ways, isn't it?
And his greatest strength is his greatest weakness.
Yeah, and I think after this interview, it's going to be difficult to sit on here and defend him. But we talked about it on the last podcast, didn't we? It must be really difficult for him to accept this position, considering the career that he's had so far and the frustration that he must feel at not being quicker than everyone else, not being more agile than everyone else, not being sharper than everyone else, must be really difficult for him. I can't remember who said it on Twitter last night, Andy. The one thing about all of this, there is no interview that could really challenge the idea that he could have signed for Manchester City and gone and lifted the Champions League, their first ever one for them last season. This is better than that. It's not a mistake to bring him back if it saved us watching that.
There's a point there, and Sir Alex Ferguson is mentioned within the interview, and I found out subsequently that it was Ferguson who said he cannot go to City. And the idea of him lifting a European Cup with a third different club, and if it was City, that
first one in blue,
first one in blue, would drive people mad. And the fact that we're even talking about a third different club, he's had the most incredible career, and history will remember him as an amazing player. Once all this has blown over, just like history remembered George Best as an amazing player, they'll remember Ronaldo was absolutely brilliant. He's probably the best player I've ever seen play for Manchester United. But the end is ugly, and the end is now. And we're seeing it playing out in real time as he comes to terms with, or doesn't come to terms with, his own decline. And I think in a few years, I've seen it happen so many times, players, even the brightest ones, they look back and go, yeah, I was a bit of a knob. You know, it took 2 or 3 years to get my head around it. I managed to fall out with everyone. I fired my agent. I managed to have arguments every single day, because your whole life has been built towards making it as a professional footballer, establishing yourself in a top team, success, 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 and that just stops. And suddenly you're a substitute, and whoa, I'm the best player in the world, because in his mind he will still think that he is. And that's made him so good, that single-mindedness.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
In his mind, United could listen to him more, younger players could listen to him more. But again, there's two sides to the story. If you're a teammate with him and you're saying, I can't put the ball in for him because he can't reach it anymore, you've also got a valid opinion there. He got away with it last year because his stats were still really, really good. But it's been a struggle watching him. And even at Fulham on Sunday, Fulham were really strong in the second half. But there were parts in the first half where you've seen that interaction between Martial and Rashford going forward, or United breaking, and it was fast. And I was thinking a couple of times, if Ronaldo was there, this move wouldn't be happening. The future's not with Ronaldo at Manchester United. I'd love him to play until he's 49 and still be doing well for Manchester United, but the reality is different. We can see that, and he's got to accept that.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
So, Laurie, you've been having a few issues with your internet over in Serbia, but we've got you back now. While you've been away, we've been talking about the idea of the interview, you know, everything that we can reflect on it, really. The question now is what happens next. Andy sort of said that it's unlikely Ronaldo plays for United again, but there's a possibility because he still has a contract. How do you see this playing out now, between now, throughout the World Cup, and towards that January transfer window?
Yeah, he's very firmly put the pressure on, hasn't he, for United to get something sorted in January. I mean, you would say that it's probably his agent's responsibility also to do something here. Jorge Mendes tried in the summer to find him a club. Sporting Lisbon, Napoli, Borussia Dortmund. Nobody, you know, either wanted him or could afford him. So it comes down to now, can they have a parting of the ways that suits both parties? I was always told that United wouldn't pay him up to get him off the books and get him out of the squad, because they then have to pay more money to buy somebody else in, and it'd be like a double hit almost. Would he accept not being paid any more money, and then he's a free agent in January? That would be his call to make. And if he feels this strongly about it, you know, you'd say, well, go on then. That's, you know, walk the walk as well as talk the talk, and say, I want to leave. I want to go to a Champions League club. Because it is interesting, I tweeted it last night, but, you know, this goals record, I think that's a serious factor in his decision to go so public, because he's on 11 more goals now than Lionel Messi. He started the season 15 more goals than him. Lionel Messi's 2 years younger than him. If he loses that legacy as the greatest ever goal Champions League goal scorer, I do think that's a significant part of his thinking at this stage, because that's, you know, his whole career, isn't it? And he doesn't want to be losing out to Messi. So that's why I think he wants to go to a Champions League club in January, because he can score maybe a few more goals in that competition. But I don't know. I mean, clearly, you know, they have to have some kind of talks. And I do, you know, Joe Glazer will be obviously across this, how much he was a part in the refusal of United to even entertain offers in the summer, whether that was just a negotiation thing with Chelsea, who were clearly the club that I think Ronaldo thought he was going to get to sign for. But and also I'm seeing people that are kind of saying that Ronaldo's, you know, finally targeting the lasers at the Glazers. But I don't think necessarily, I don't think he's gone that strong. I mean, he's not named them by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
And I know that he's sort of hinting at things that are within their remit, and that is, you know, Carrington and the stadium and the improvements and the squad and the structure of the club. But I don't think he's gone as overt as actually, you know, criticising them directly. So whether that's part of his negotiation so that, he doesn't annoy them too much and they ultimately agreed to let him go, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be really interesting to see who actually sits down with him. I think Richard Arnold is the kind of key figure in terms of George Mendes from the club. He's been the one that's, I think, handled that dialogue more frequently. There's John Murta there, who is the football director. There is actually, we have a line in a previous piece where we've said that Ronaldo actually at one point stood up and said United need a sporting director, which is, you know, kind of, you know, you think that that's John Murta's job, really. So I wonder if that's something that Ronaldo's getting at. It's going to be, he will want a really good World Cup now where he can actually show off his skills, and hopefully someone will actually go, okay, he can do a job for us, because otherwise you've got this kind of limbo situation where he wants to leave. Ten Hag, you know, would ideally sell him, but there's no solution.
Ed Woodward brought him back. Ed Woodward went to Joel Glazer and said, we can think this will work and here are the figures why. Ed Woodward sold the dream to Joel Glazer, and Joel Glazer bought it from the commercial perspective. And then Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was asked if he would like Cristiano Ronaldo, and he said, yeah, no problem, I can work with him, I've got another player. I think any manager would probably have said that. There's a massive disconnect now between the Ronaldo camp and Manchester United, and I'll give you an example of that. In the summer, United met Ronaldo's people. They had what they thought was a convivial meeting where they found several points of agreement. Half an hour later, stories start breaking in the Portuguese media that have almost certainly been briefed by Ronaldo's camp that are the opposite of what Manchester United thought they'd agreed with the Ronaldo camp. So the trust has gone. And that is an example of how the trust has gone. You've basically got, people are allowed to agree and to disagree. But if you're looking at people face to face, if you're flying over to see people face to face, and then you're walking out the room and saying something completely different, that doesn't help any party. That's happened several times.
No, and you can understand why there's been that breakdown in the relationship if things like that have been going on. Of course, you can keep your eye on The Athletic for the very latest on Cristiano Ronaldo. And you can also get updates as well on Laurie's trip to the World Cup. It's all over social media. There's written stories and videos on The Athletic as well. But we've got you here for the moment, Laurie, and your Wi-Fi is still working for the minute too. So where are you up to and how much further have you got to go?
Yeah, so we're in Belgrade now. We're in Zagreb yesterday. And like I say, we got this 6-hour bus. That wasn't too bad. But whilst I was on that bus, I wrote up an interview with Diego Biscan. Now, United fans might not want to hear that given his Liverpool allegiances, but actually he was a really, really good guy. He had an incredible passion for Panini stickers. So we sort of asked him what his first World Cup memory was. And he went back to 1986 and the Mexico World Cup and how he basically completed the whole album 6 months after the tournament finished. But he needed one player and it was Steve Nicol. And at this point, he's an 8-year-old and he doesn't know who Steve Nicol is, even though he would later go on to replicate him and win the European Cup with Liverpool. And he just knew the number. And one of his kids playing football outside, he started hearing this kid shout a number and he was like, right, straight over there. And he went into incredible detail about the techniques and strategies for, you know, the Swapsies games. So he had like a few different ones where, you know, you had to slap them down with your hand on concrete and they'd flip over, and any that flipped over, you've got to keep. And he said he had the perfect technique. There was you had to get air underneath them and stack them in a certain way. So anyway, it just went in such an unexpected way that it was really charming and interesting. And he's the under-21s manager for Croatia. So he actually has worked with a lot of the players that are now going to be at the World Cup. He's going to be over in Qatar. Guardiol obviously being one of them, and he actually said it's a bit too soon for him to move to a big European club. He thought he needed another year or two over at Leipzig, but he thinks that eventually he'll be one of the most expensive defenders in the world. I wonder if that's one that, you know, United are looking at some point. We're going on to, so we're in Belgrade now, going to hopefully, we haven't actually, you know, sorted out Vidic or Matic or any of the other Serbians that United have had over the years, unfortunately, but hopefully going to have a walk around, see what people in Serbia think of the World Cup. And then we're getting a car and going to Sofia. And I think we do have Dimitar Berbatov lined up again. So that should be...
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, I think that should be a really good one. Yeah, yeah. Martino, the cameraman, sorted it this time. So he's got his connections over in Bulgaria. And then from there, we get an overnight sleeper train to Istanbul, although we haven't actually booked our tickets for that yet because you can't book them online. So hopefully we can find a bed on this sleeper train. Otherwise, I'll be even more frantic by the end of it.
Brilliant.
And then from there, yeah, we're not sure exactly where we're going to go after that. But yeah, we'll get to Qatar about November the 19th, we think.
Okay, so you're nearly there, aren't you? You can keep up to date on Laurie's journey, including that interview that's coming up with Dimitar Berbatov on The Athletic. If you're not a subscriber, you can do so now and become one for just £1 a month for the first 6 months. Go to theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod. But good luck with the rest of your journey, Laurie.
Cheers, guys. See you later.
Thanks for coming on. Okay, somehow we've gone half an hour and not really talked about what was a brilliant finish at Fulham on Sunday. And we spoke about Alejandro Garnacho at length on the last podcast. Go back and listen to it if you missed it, because we were teeing up that winner, Carl, in a way, weren't we? We were talking about the sorts of qualities that he was showing for Manchester United in the first team. And in a way, that run, that burst of pace and that finish were exactly the types of things that we were saying he had. He's made an incredible start to his United senior career, and that just topped it off before the World Cup.
Oh, yeah. There are a few better things as a football fan to watch one of your own get the winner and then to watch him do it in pretty much the final kick of the game. Lovely. Lovely, 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 lovely.
What was it like in the stadium feeling it? What was the moment like?
It was a bit of a strange one in that I myself, and I think quite a few people in the stadium didn't think Garnacho would get onto the pass. So there was the sort of a fraction of a second where the Craven Cottage crowd is completely quiet because they've absolutely sickened of, oh God, we've lost it. And then another fraction of a second as the United fan base have gone, has he done it? And then it becomes clear that he has done it. He has done the great thing that everyone has dreamed about doing at least once, which is getting that last minute winner for United if you're a United fan. Yeah, it was glorious. He had a really fun game. There was a bit, I'd say, so he played 21 minutes, and there was an incident where he had a tangle of legs after driving at a Fulham fullback, went down in the box, and I think quite a few United fans thought that was a penalty, and quite a few Fulham fans were believing him to be a dive and a cheat. There was a good 5 minute period where every time Garnacho got onto the ball afterwards, he was booed by the Craven Cottage fan base.
Oh, he's been booed already.
He's been booed already.
Brilliant. Well done, lad.
So that's how you know he's dangerous. That's how you know he's putting the frighteners on players. And Ten Hag was very measured in his comments afterwards, again saying the outcome was good, was the quote, and saying he's quite pleased with him, but also again reiterated the need for consistency. He almost lamented the fact that the World Cup is in the way now, because the momentum that he's built up might stop. He goes, the one thing he needs is consistency, and now he's not going to play a game for several weeks, so that's quite annoying. But I think Ten Hag's is happy with Garnacho. And something I really liked also was the celebrations. Everyone mobbed Garnacho. And at full time, I think, you know, Ten Hag gave him a big old hug as well. So there's a real sense of collective and community building at this Ten Hag project now.
Yeah, and then the interview drops. Anyway, we've talked about that. Andy, you were witnessing it amongst Manchester United fans in Norway. I'm guessing if the away end was raucous at Craven Cottage, Oslo was pretty banging when that goal went in as well.
Yeah, I was sat in with the Red Army in the Scotsman pub in central Oslo. So on the busiest street in the capital of Norway, there's this huge red, white and black Manchester United flag. And I love that because, you know, Manchester United are not from Norway, they're not from Oslo. And the pub was packed, hundreds of United fans in there. It was a good first half. The second half was disappointing. You could feel the mood just slumping, going down. Oh, no, no, no. And suddenly there's a gap now between United and the teams above. And we've got to look at the league table like this for 5 weeks. And, whoa, that's a great ball from Eriksen. Goal! Everyone just went absolutely mental. And we live for moments like that, don't we? The story, the young lad, the celebration, had all my mates in the away end messaging me. It sounded absolutely brilliant. I love Craven Cottage. I refuse to go there until that new stand has been built. So I'm buying myself another 45 years there.
It's almost there.
It's not built. They started building this, Carl, at the same time as the pyramids of Giza, right? And they've still not finished it. And I know Cockney workmen can take the time on the banks of the River Thames. And it does look like a very nice stand. And I love Craven Cottage. I really love the mixture of the traditional old stands. But really, really big win and good win. We've got to credit Fulham. I think they played really well. I think they were aggressive. I saw Christian Eriksen and Bruno Fernandes saying that after the game. They've had some excellent results. So for United to go there...
Fulham, the last two games, have lost in the 93rd minute against United and the 95th minute against City.
Yeah.
I mean, that's particularly galling to sign off for the World Cup with that.
And to see City lose at home, I sort of ignore them. And also,
I was there at the Etihad
I was watching it on Saturday. And I'm thinking, all right, you just know it's going to flash up on your phone. I was about to get on a plane that City 2-1, 95th minute. And for the opposite to happen, get in there. And I love it how football does these irrational things to you. I wouldn't have minded Newcastle not winning again. I wouldn't have minded Tottenham not coming from behind again. But it was a good weekend, wasn't it? From a Manchester United perspective.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a decent weekend.
Yeah, and I watched England cricket team with my dad win the T20 World Cup on Sunday morning as well, with a stinking hangover after a long overdue night out with the missus on Saturday night. So yeah, it's been a lovely weekend in that sense. Just on Garnacho, one last word on him, Carl. One great thing that he's been able to do as well, he's ridden those initial comments about his attitude, where that was the story, to actually now making his ability and his goals the story. Even after that moment that he had at Real Sociedad, Bruno Fernandes still felt the need to bring it back to the point on his attitude and the point on what had happened in pre-season. After that game yesterday, everyone was just praising him. He's managed to break through that, hasn't he, and make his talent the talking point.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. I think Ten Hag, the way Ten Hag is speaking about Garnacho now, he's describing him as a happy bonus to his squad and is describing him as an additive. I don't think Ten Hag came in August and went, yep, Garnacho is going to be my second choice left winger or whatever, but I think he's established himself in that role. I can't see Garnacho being a starter if everyone's fit, but if it gets to that 30 minute left and you need to get a goal, at the moment there's not a player right now I wouldn't throw on before Garnacho, because he gets on the ball and he drives at his man and he's going to give him them stepovers, and that's what you want. He provides clarity when that United attack can get confused, because as Andy said, Fulham were good. Malacia played at right back, and Antti Elanga played it right wing, and Willian gave him a tough old time. A tough, tough, tough old time.
Yeah, and it's ironic that when Elanga went off, it was Bruno on the right wing with the slight error that ended up giving Fulham the opportunity to get that equaliser. And Dan James, good lad, don't celebrate against Manchester United. Although I'd forgive him if he did, considering we sold him and he can move on with his career. You're allowed, Dan, if you want to. Let's talk about Christian Eriksen as well, Andy, if we can, because, you know, if the goal for Garnacho was eye-catching, it was actually Eriksen's first goal for United, which is quite surprising, really, considering his ability and what he can do. He just is having more and more of an influence on this team, isn't he? And bringing the goal and the assist that wins the game just underlines that, really.
He's an influencer. He's a creator. He scored one. He should have scored a second one just before half-time.
Yeah, he should.
And in the second half...
Quite a few people should have scored a second goal for United in that first half, though.
There were a lot of chances, and I thought that we'd be going, don't take your chances, you get punished for that. But that ball, playing it into a crowded area of Fulham defenders, just to do that makes no logic to me watching it. But if you're at a level where you can do that and know that the momentum is carrying the Fulham players towards their own goal, and in the middle of it you've got this live wire with really, really fast feet and heels who just times it perfectly to get onto the ball, bang. So Christian Eriksen is a very intelligent player. I thought spoke well after the game. Ten Hag, when he spoke about Garnacho, he still did qualify the comments and say the World Cup's not actually good because he could lose focus now. The momentum's going to be lost now. It could all go to his head now. That was the implication, and that can't happen. So I think Manchester United players and manager are really going to keep on his case, and I think that is the good thing to do. Don't let him get carried away. We've seen so many players fall because they've got carried away. Get to a good level. Get 50 games under your belt, first of all. Then start signing more commercial deals or whatever you want to do.
Yeah, I guess the warning for him is the fact that he was the first teenager to score a stoppage time winner for United in the Premier League since Federico Maeda back in 2009. And we all know that for whatever reason, Maeda's United career didn't quite work out how it could have done from those, well, from that goal really, and that early sign at 17.
Oh, I really want to just, as a quick note, just point out Bruno Fernandes' match day post-match comments to broadcast where he said, talked about the World Cup, and said it should be done in a better way, and he wasn't happy with the selection of the World Cup to happen in the winter and at Qatar, which was brave.
And correct.
Yeah, I just want to mention that and say, well done you.
Yeah, you were definitely right to flag that up, Carl. Yeah, thank you. Okay, then, that's all we've got time for this episode, but we'll be back at the end of the week to react to whatever more comes out of Ronaldo's mouth, plus our mid-season report on United and Erik ten Hag. That'll be the last one before we take a break for the World Cup as well. In the meantime, keep your eyes peeled to The Athletic for the very latest on Ronaldo and all the best build-up to Qatar as well. And remember, if you're not a subscriber, you can sign up now for £1 a month for the first 6 months. Just go to theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod. But thank you, Andy. Thank you, Carl. And thank you for listening as well. We'll see you on the next one. Bye-bye.